Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we moved, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude.
That bitch good, nigga.
Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurt himself.
You from New State.
It's over. It's over. It's over. I say it's over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, I'm fucking. Let's go across the street.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
All right, today's...
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house.
I don't know. Okay, I hit the wrong button. Today's podcast, open mic, but I wanted to announce what we have on our scrolling marquee here on Blog Talk Radio. Mission 6521. That's what we have started here with It's My House. Mission 6521, and that it's approximately a 20-week. Well, the first part of it's 20 weeks. So we're in week one. And the mission of 6521 is this. Essentially, by the end of 20 weeks, we would have built or taught at least 100 people how to build their own debt-free house. So we're in week one. We're still in week one. So it's like a 6 month type thing. Most of these houses, well, for practical purposes, they'll be tiny houses. And we're modeling, as far as building strategy, 7 Day Adventists. Oh, excuse me, not 7 Day Adventists. Excuse me, Amish, Mennonite, because they basically Amish, Mennonite, and Jehovah's Witness. Those are the three. Now, we're not joining, we're not promoting their religions or anything like that. And we're not knocking those religions. But those three groups of people, Jehovah's Witness, Amish, and Mennonite, they practice what I call social capital financing. In other words, they use people. So they don't use any institutional financing. No government financing, none of that stuff. It's strictly relationships with people. One bit of information that I passed yesterday, and I posted it on our Facebook page, which is It's Miles TV on Facebook. One particular Jehovah's Witness, you know, their places of worship are called Kingdom Halls. And they typically build those kingdom halls in like 1 or 2 days. But this particular kingdom hall, although it was done in 1 day, they constructed from scratch a 4,000 square foot kingdom hall or church, whatever you want to call it, which passed building code inspectors and all that. They built it in a day, a 4,000 square foot facility. Everything that we're going to be touching will be under 400 square feet. So that's mission, what we call mission 6521. We've already started. We haven't started building, but one of the things that I pointed out yesterday when I was reading about what the Jehovah's Witness do, and the next time one of them knocks on, I got a sign on my door just for them. No solicitation. But I think I'm going to take that sign down. So the next time a Jehovah's Witness knocks on my door, I'm going to invite them in, and I'm going to pick their brain because this is what they do. This 4,000-square-foot facility required 400 hands. Break that down. That's 200 people. The youngest person was probably 7 or 8 years old. The oldest person was 65. Although they did not use institutional financing or no government financing or anything like that, they did take donations. So they raised $60,000 and built a 4,000 square foot facility. That's how they roll. So mission 6521 is based on that. Now the numbers of 6521, where does that come from? Isaiah 65:21, it says, "We shall build houses and live in them." So I just took 65:21, and that's our mission. And we'll be covering a little bit about that every day. And then we have 5 pillars, which I have listed. Actually, I call 5 stones, which are listed in our program notes here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, we have an assignment. I gave it out yesterday. The assignment, for those who missed out yesterday, I'll give it out again today. Tomorrow, the assignment is due for those who want to discuss it. The assignment is there's a movie for free on YouTube, and it's titled Black Gestapo. Tomorrow, that's what we'll be talking about, Black Gestapo. We'll be talking about that movie. So if you're interested in participating in that discussion on the movie Black Gestapo, go to YouTube, look up Black Gestapo, and watch it. And we'll be, that's the topic for tomorrow. We'll be discussing the movie Black Gestapo. Let's see, what else? Oh, yesterday, we had a guy called in, and he's organizing something where he wants to help people, let's see, get a house, and I'm thinking either get one house or maybe two. Well, bare minimum, he wants to help people get a house and a car. All right. So what I pointed out to him, because, you know, there are over 3,100 counties in the United States, so that can be kind of a daunting thing. So what I suggested to him yesterday and what we did yesterday, just briefly, is a method that I use in part, is if you're trying to get anything on a mass level, well, it doesn't even have to be on a mass level, even on an individual level, and you're trying to do it in a place like, I'll put it this way, any city that's got over, from my point of view, any city that's got over, to be honest about it, over 1,000 people, any city that's got over 2,500 people, in my opinion, it'll be kind of difficult to get anything off the ground, particularly if you want to have any impact. So my whole strategy is, and you can get several clues from people like the late Sam Walton, even Jeff Bezos, or anybody who's in the billion-dollar club. Now, I'm not saying become a billionaire, but billionaires drop clues. And I'll use Sam Walton as a good example. Bezos is a good example, too. Let me see how they do it. Sam Walton, he was just doing five-and-dime. He had a five-and-dime franchise. But it's not so much that he had a five-and-dime franchise to start. Walmart started in Bentonville, Arkansas. Bentonville, Arkansas is a small town. And in small towns, the smaller the town, the smaller the community, the less politics, and it's the less rules and regulations, and the less rules and regulations is where I say you discover the real United States of America. In the real United States of America, in my opinion, everybody's equal. And I'm black saying that. And I'll give you some examples here in a moment. Using myself. So Sam Walton, and in the United States, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. That's municipalities. I'm not including unincorporated places. But 19,500 municipalities, and out of that, there's only 10 of those towns that have a population of a million or more people. You know, New York City is one of them, Chicago's another one of them, Los Angeles, California's another one of them. The state of Texas has three of them. They have San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston. All right, all those cities I just named, those are in the top 10 most densely populated areas in the United States, the top 10. If you notice with elections, presidential elections, the candidates, they don't speak in every state of the union. They only go to the major population areas. That's where they go. Wonder how Donald Trump won the election that he did win, with the Electoral College, because the Electoral College picks up the people in Bangor, Maine, Podunk, Iowa, Nome, Alaska, the little guy. So it's, and the majority of the people that live in the United States, well, not the majority. The 75 to 80% of this country lives on like 3%, 3 to 5% of the landmass. So where the real United States of America, which is the other 95%, the real United States of America is in rural America. And if you concentrate on living, seeking out opportunities, et cetera, et cetera, in the 95% of the country where there's little or no competition, that's where you go. So one of the cities that, and here's my formula, I told the guy yesterday, and we did it right on air. I told him, I said, find out what's the smallest populated county in the United States. And that happened to be, if I can remember, Loving County, Texas. Loving County, Texas. And, matter of fact, let me just double check again. Yep. And in places, there's a whole, put it this way, in Loving County, Texas, there's a whole lot more Loving County, Texas, than there is a New York City, a Miami, Florida, Los Angeles, California. That's where you go to places like that. We also found a place in North Carolina, but you can do this practically in every state. Look for the county that has the least amount of people in that particular state. And then look for communities within that county. And then, you know, the cost of living, you'll have more legal freedom. Now, you might not have the conveniences, like in Loving County, Texas. Loving County, Texas has a countywide population of 64 people. All right. And next time I visit, well, I'm going to make a special trip to Texas because I've got 10 acres of land three counties away. Well, the count, let's see, one, two, three. Yeah, three counties away from Loving County, Texas. But, all right, so in a county that's got 64 people, you're not going to have, first thing, you're not going to have a Walmart. You're not going to have a bus line. You're not going to have a subway system. But that's all right. You're also going to not, you're not going to have all these other, what I call inconveniences that you'll find in a larger city, a dramatically larger city. So, anyway, Loving County, Texas has a countywide population of 64 people. I can place an ad on Facebook Marketplace and get more than that within a matter of minutes. Let's see. In Loving County, Texas, there's only one town. Well, all right, let's be technical with this. There's only one recognized populated town. There's a total of four towns in the whole county. Three of those are ghost towns. Now, for those who don't know it, ghost towns do have people living in them. But for some reason, you know, it's typically not enough for the Census Bureau to count it. So the highest populated town out of the four towns in Loving County, Texas, is Mentone, Texas. Mentone, Texas has a population of 19 people. So, now, This is an off-the-grid county with an off-the-grid with off-the-grid townships, which basically means you can paint your own canvas. Now, you're going to have your own skill set, but you can build the kind of house that you want to build. Typically, you don't have to get a building permit to build, because typically in places like this, there's no code enforcement. There's no police department. There's no EMS. There's none of these guys. And some of you psychologically need those things. Me personally, I don't. So, but in the places like Loving County, Texas, and Mentone, Texas, those are the places that make billionaires. Because you go to the places that have little or no government regulation. Which is, now, you can do that in cyberspace, which is what Jeff Bezos did. You know, the Internet basically is virtually has zero government regulation for the most part. They haven't figured out how to regulate it yet. I mean, this guy started off selling mail-order shoes. Then he went to mail-order books. And, you know, and within a matter of time, he became a billionaire. So, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook is nothing but a glorified website. You don't need a license to start a website. You don't need a license to get to reserve a domain name. To register a domain name depends on who you go through. I mean, it used to be $5 if you went through Yahoo. I don't know what it is now. Depends on the service, because they got, you know, various different people that register, GoDaddy, you know, Homestead, just a bunch of them out there. But in any event, in our Mission 6521, we shall be doing building projects predominantly in areas that have a low population density of people. That's what we'll be doing. So we got a call at 1 o'clock this afternoon for people interested in that. So and that call, we're doing it, we'll be discussing like two locations during that, one in Florida and one in Ohio. Anybody interested in their neck of the woods, just send me a note on our Facebook page, It's My House TV, that's our Facebook page, or text me or call me at 425-520-0605, and we'll see, you know, we'll see, first thing, depending on where you are, if we'll be doing something in your neck of the woods, or if we can do something in your neck of the woods. But we work with, like I say, where we go fishing is where the population is like super low. And we haven't hit as low as Mentone, Texas yet, population 19. But food for thought, any of you guys that would like to own your own town, you can do it. There are plenty of places to do it. In any event, all right, that's sort of in early for today unless you guys have announcements. Once again, the homework assignment is Black Gestapo. Black Gestapo. It is a movie that you can find on YouTube. And we shall be discussing the movie Black Gestapo tomorrow. Um, I believe there's a Wikipedia page on it. It was filmed in, I think 1975. And the movie is an hour and a half long. All right, so we shall be discussing that tomorrow. And let's see. Once again, if you guys have any announcements, just press 1, and then if not, well, you know what? With our mission 2165, oh, wait a minute, we got a hand up. 407, your mic is open.
Oh, yeah, good morning, L.A. This is Beato with Health and Wellbeing with on Blog Talk Radio, the Female Solution. Tomorrow, this is health, Mental Health Awareness Month, the month of May, for those of you who don't know. I don't know who decides on these things, but anyway. So tomorrow, my guest will be Robin, who is a co-partner with you on this show many times. And we're going to talk about developing a healthy mind. So I want to invite your listeners to join us because the crazy things going on with Naomi Judd, for one, that got my attention, how her children announced she died from mental illness. And all of us are going, what is that? What does that mean? And so we realize another suicide took place in the popular Hollywood crowd or music atmosphere. And then I saw an interview yesterday with Chelsea Chris' mom and father. Chelsea Chris was the Miss America who jumped off a building this year and committed suicide. So you look at these beautiful women, talented women, successful women committing suicide. And you wonder what is going on. So tomorrow, Robin and I will talk about developing a healthy mind in this month of awareness of mental health. So, and thank you. I'm going to look up Black Gestapo and see what that's about. So thanks for an informative show.
When it comes to, now, people can relate to people dying from cancer, but can a person really die from mental illness?
Of course they can, because mind, body, spirit, we're connected. So it doesn't just start with some disease in the brain. It starts with, okay, you look at these two women who committed suicide this month. They were successful, but their belief systems were of such, I think, that their self-esteem was maybe devalued. And I'm guessing they went to some doctor and got some antidepressants. And because they both had severe depression and anxiety. That's what they were suffering with, severe depression. One of the ways you overcome depression is get outside and exercise. If you're doing, there are lots of YouTube videos, for one, and lots of information on the Internet about how exercise helps people who are depressed or have anxiety. So that could have been the missing element. I don't know, but that's one of the things we'll talk about tomorrow.
I have a theory on that, which I guess sort of might coincide with what you just said. The body, and mind you, I'm no wellness guru at all, but I'm giving you my observation based on me and what I've noticed with some people. One, namely my mother. I think a lot of illnesses are caused.
Did you say your mother? You said namely your mother.
One. Also her.
Yeah, okay.
But as a matter of fact, since you would bring it up. One time my mother was on the phone. She was making phone calls to friends, whatever, relatives, and she was saying goodbye, like she was about to die. I never forget it. Okay, I can laugh at it now. And at the time, I was studying you know, pHs, you know, how your pH levels in your body and whatnot and how it can affect your body. So I said, you know what, her pH level is off. I don't know what she's cooking. She was always popping pills. So what I did, I didn't panic or nothing, didn't, you know, what I did was I just happened to have some Bragg's apple cider vinegar and just bought a bottle a couple of days ago. I mean, you know, this is some years ago. So what I did was I went and I got some water, got a glass, put some water in it, and then put like a tablespoon of Bragg's in there and mixed it up and then gave it to her, and she drank that. She's still on the phone saying goodbye. And then I go out in the backyard where she has a citrus garden, where she's got like 13, 14, 15 trees that she planted back there. I call it the Garden Eden. So I got a grapefruit off the tree, brought it back in the house, washed it off, cut it up in the quarters, and gave her just one quarter. Brought it to her room and said, eat this. 15 minutes later, she did a 180. The saying goodbyes were gone. Total a positive attitude, physical energy, and she was, 88, 89 at the time, something like that. Now here's my, once again, I'm not a wellness guru. Everything I did from the Bragg's, the water, to getting that fruit off the tree raw and giving it to her, was my theory was that her whatever she took, whatever she ingested, threw her pH off, and her pH went in a negative, and the Bragg's with the water and the fruit off the tree brought her pH back an even keel, and her body chemistry got normalized. Now this is my LA's theory, and that's what did it for her. And I've done that two or three times with her, at least. So what does that have to do with Naima Judd? I don't know. I don't know how she died. I don't know her back history. I don't know her medical history. But I believe a lot of people who get depressed or whatever, their body chemistry is off to whatever they might have ingested. And if you can get that pH level back up to a positive where it should be. Exercise is one tool you can use. Diet is another tool you can use. And I'll land my plane there. Now, you're the wellness person. I'm not. What do you think?
Now, my experience is this. The most powerful thing to influence the pH, the potential for hydrogen, that's what pH stands for, potential for hydrogen. Hydrogen is an element in the universe like oxygen that we need to dwell on this earth in health and strength and energy. So high potential for hydrogen. Number one thing that affects pH more than anything else, what do you think it is?
You know, water or oxygen, I guess.
Emotions. Your emotions are going to determine whether you're going to have an alkaline pH or an acid pH. Now, I discovered this with my sister, who lived with me for 9 months with breast cancer. And even though we were doing juicing, raw juicing, alkaline water by the gallons, raw diet, just a perfect diet and prayer and all that, her emotions were very acid. And that's because she held on to the grief from the death of her only child. She had a lot of unforgiveness about that relationship she had with that child's father, and guilt about her whole life. So I watched her and I was like, I don't know why she's not healing. With all that we were doing, juicing, fat, the diet was perfect. There was no doubt that in my mind the diet was perfect. I had been working in the health food store for almost 10 years, so I was applying what I had learned in the health food store. But her emotions kept her body producing more acid energy, and the cancer just spread throughout her breast. So that was my emotions are number one. So you're in the case of your mom, just think about, was your mom having a joyful experience while she was when she retired from her job of what? How many years was she an emergency room nurse, seeing all that trauma? Your mother's emotions were what really, I think, triggered her, probably her roller coaster in her pH level. I mean, you can do some things with the diet.
Also diet.
That will affect the pH, but you're not going to change the pH to a healthy, alkaline, stationary place unless you work on the emotions and get those emotions into joy. And forgiveness, I think forgiveness is number one in emotions now in terms of healing and strength and all that. There has to be a lot of, number one, forgiveness for the self. And then all the people who
well, let me use myself as an example. Once, this was in D.C. Many years ago, decade. It was hot. I didn't have that much money. And I went to 7-Eleven, and I bought me a big 3-liter bottle of pineapple soda for 99 cents. So went back, took that home, and chilled it. And, you know, a few hours later, I found myself mad for some reason. And then I kept on drinking, and the next, I said, wait a minute, I haven't talked to nobody. I haven't, there's no reason why I should be mad or angry. And I thought about it, I said, well, wait a minute, what did I ingest? It was the pineapple soda, which was loaded, that 3-liter bottle of coming from 7-Eleven was loaded with sugar. So I said, okay, let me stop doing this. So I haven't bought a 3-liter bottle of soda. I knew that eating certain foods would throw my pH level off. Now,
let's be clear, LA, that's a drug. It's not food. That's a drug.
Okay, all right. But I treated it like, but I ingested it in my system. Now, if I go juice something, if I go get, you know, if I go to the store and buy me some grapes, some kale, or spinach, and you know, get a I got a juice extractor here and juice it all up and drink that, I can drink one glass. If I drink two glasses of that, and I don't have to drink them back to back, I can drink one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and I feel almost indestructible. I don't feel like eating any food or chewing anything, but I got plenty of energy just from drinking that raw green drink.
So that's an energy, that's an emotion of love, you know, because you love your body enough to give it the best nutrition. People who are eating Oreo cookies at night, Coca-Cola, pizza, that's not love for the body, because the body, this is a sacred temple. And if you love your sacred temple, number one, you probably do more fasting than eating, because food does not really help this temple get better. It's just a comfort thing. But that's a whole nother issue. But if you love your body, you're going to give it the nutrition, the energy, the food, the water that it really needs. That's half the battle. That's love. Now, if you're in a relationship with someone where you're having a very forgiving emotions or joy, dancing, eating together, that's another part of the pH, alkaline pH, if you're having a harmonious relationship. But if you're in a toxic relationship with somebody where there's always conflict and arguing, your pH is going to be going toward the acid role. So you see there's an interconnection with food, emotions, and relationships. Relationship number one with yourself. How do you feel about yourself? Drinking alcohol all the time, taking drugs, your body's going to respond and become acid. So
well,
you don't even love yourself.
All right, let's say you go to something like Hold on. Hey, Walt, I'm on a podcast. I'm going to call you afterwards, all right?
Okay.
All right. You figure they would figure that out during a text. Anyway. All right. So, where was I going with? Oh, so let's say a person goes to the doctor and, well, let me use myself as an example again. Once I went to the doctor, had a checkup, and the guy said I had high blood sugar, so he gave me a free sample of what he had near the lower blood pressure. So I happened to read, you know, the label, and on the label, the side effect, it said, in rare cases, could cause suicidal thoughts or death or whatever. I never opened up the thing. And what I did was I talked to another friend of mine. She recommended garlic pills or garlic and magnesium. I went the natural way, and within a matter of days, everything's been normal, and everything's been normal since then. Now, I'm saying all out to say this. So some people, I believe, and once again, I'm not a wellness person, they could have a healthy state of mind right now, but if they take something that throws their pH off, I mean, your mood can change. Just like if you take a drink. You know, if a person, I mean, alcohol is a depressant. So, and some people can't handle their liquor. So, you know, some people, when they have a drink of liquor or beer or whatever, you know, they get rowdy and negative and aggressive. Other people, it has a different effect. So I don't know what the case was with, you know, Nine with Judd or whatever, but, and I'm a big believer in watch your food allergies. Become aware of your food allergies.
No, Naomi Judd was diagnosed with hepatitis C, B, A, I forget which one. So for a while, I'm sure she was on some drugs to help. They were probably treating her for that. Okay, so drugs out. Remember, acid, your microbiome, your gut flora is really key also in helping you have an alkaline pH. It affects your pH,
right,
too. So drugs like that, drugs treating hepatitis or any disease, are going to affect your microbe, your gut flora. So her flora was probably in the tank or in bad shape when being on drugs all those times for hepatitis. Then,
yeah, did you see the most recent picture of her?
Yeah, all bloated in her face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm figuring that's from that medication
then,
she was taking.
So what comes out of that? This is my guess. I'm not a doctor, but I observe people and who's treating them and why they're treated. All those years being treated by hepatitis C by some drug, who knows what kind of drug, probably some. She gets depressed. She gets severe anxiety and depression because they probably were trying one drug after another after another. So then what happens? Well, I'm depressed. I have anxiety. We got just the thing for you, an antidepressant. And guess what's on every antidepressant drug? Thoughts of suicide are possible. Every drug. I looked that up after Chelsea's death, the Miss America jumped off the building. I started doing my research on every single. In fact, I did a show on this, Blog Talk Show.
Well, she was
every
only like 25 years old.
She was 30 because they said she was the oldest Miss America ever winning, and she got depressed over that because they were talking about how old she was at 30. Like, so I did research on all the popular antidepressants. Every single one of them had a warning on them about suicidal thoughts. So that's why with Naomi, with Chelsea, if anybody makes a statement that they've been suffering from depression, anxiety, all that, I'm betting they haven't revealed it yet, but they were on some drug, antidepressant drug. If you're seeing a psychiatrist or a doctor, that's what they recommend when they can't control your depression and anxiety. Let's try this. I forget all the popular ones, but let's try this antidepressant, which leads many times to suicide. So that's why we're doing a show tomorrow on developing a healthy mind. And one of the part of that is choosing not to put these drugs in your body, because they're going to affect your microbes, your gut flora, which affects your whole body. And the gut flora affects your brain. The brain and the your large intestines area, the gut, your gut microbes have a vagus nerve communication line. The brain is constantly communicating to your colon, your gut flora, all the time. What do you need? You need this type of microbe. Send it out. Send it out. It's a major communication system this body is. So that
What could a person do? You named one already, but what could a person do if they're feeling depressed?
Number one, get outside and get some sun and some exercise. Number one, start developing a healthy exercise program. Get outside. Ride your bike. Walk. Do anything outside. Number two is look at the foods you're putting in your body. Why are you eating these? Why are you eating Oreo cookies? Why are you drinking wine every day? Why do you need this? Why? Look at the food. And then breathing. Develop a breathing yoga program where you're breathing, you're consciously bringing more oxygen and meditating every day. Those would be my top three is exercise, diet, and breathing, and yoga meditation.
Okay, well,
need to fast. Fasting may be the first thing somebody needs to do if they've been eating a lot of junk food.
Get all that gunk out of your body.
All that your gut, remember, your gut, your flora, your microbes in your large intestine, that is what is controlling your brain activity, actually. So you get depressed and you're anxious, what are you feeding your microbes? Your microbes need to be fed. When in our diet, we should be more conscious about what feeds our microbes, and that's fiber, fermented foods like yoga, pickles, sauerkraut. That's what your gut loves. That's what keeps it healthy. And what just weakens or destroys it? Sugar,
more sugar.
Destroys it, weakens it. And then you can't even have a healthy communication to your brain if you have a high sugar diet. You're going to always be struggling with healthy thoughts and healthy behavior. So that's just a part of it. So I hope everybody join us tomorrow. We're going to talk about
it. All right, so that's at what time and the number?
8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and it's 515-605-9325, Health and Wellbeing with Viata on the Female Solution.
Okay, and all right, then tomorrow we'll be doing the movie review of Black Gestapo. On that note, we're going to end it here. Yeah, we're going to end it here. It's free on YouTube.
Good music in that?
Huh?
Good music on Black Gestapo?
Oh, well, you got to go listen. It's a 70s flick.
Okay, we'll see.
It's a 70s flick, 1974.
All right, thank you.
On that note, we're going to knock off early for today. Thank you, Viata. And we'll see you guys tomorrow.